This is Brock and Saul.
Brock Heward and Marcus. Sorry about just Mike.
Presented by Carter, Volkswagen, and Ballard.
On Seattle Sports Station.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Where's like the buff dudes at?
Now here are your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Saul. Cut the
fire! Yeah, rolling along here on a Friday. Hope you guys are getting ready for a fun weekend. Hope you've got great plans. Hope you're going to be relaxing and partying and seeing friends, being social, or sleeping, whatever it is you need. I hope you're getting ready to do it tonight and then into the weekend. It's a good time of year. It's that one crazy. This is usually Super Bowl weekend, at least it used to be. And now, I don't know, the whole schedule of the season has now been kind of screwed up by the extra game. Now the Super Bowl is a week later. Today, generally, February 3rd is a day that I associate with Super Bowls for a bunch of different reasons. February 3rd, 2002, is one of the best days of my entire life. Probably top three day of my life.
Wow.
February 3rd.
So your 3rd. Two kids and that day.
Yeah, the kid days were fine. I mean, like, one of them I needed to go out and look for a house that day. I mean, like, they were good days. The kids were born. But, like, the actual day itself, I mean, it was meaningful. But, like, February 3rd, 2002, I woke up. I was living in Santa Monica. And I drove down to – I'm sorry. I was living in Playa del Rey. And I drove down. I did some laundry. I got myself all set for the game that night. 2001 Patriots versus the greatest show on turf. And I went to my buddy Mike's house, watched the game there with him, stone sober, didn't drink a drop, wanted to really see what it looked like when the first team I'd ever really rooted for won a Super Bowl or won a championship, really, because growing up, didn't get to see a lot of that.
Yeah.
And so it happened, and they won, and it was remarkable. Tom Brady, for the first time, winning a Super Bowl after John Madden told him he should just sit on the ball and play for overtime. And Brady's like, "Meh, how about if I just go down and let Adam Vinatieri kick a field goal? I think that'll work better." And they did, and went through the uprights. Remarkable moment. And I still, by the way, think there's 3 seconds left in that game. It's really weird. I think he kicked it with 6 seconds left. The clock seems to stop with 2 or 3 seconds left, but they never had to kick off again. I'm still not really sure how that happened. I've watched that, you know, ending I don't know how many times. Still seems kind of weird to me, but okay, whatever.
Okay.
So I decided afterwards that I should celebrate the fact that the game had been over, and I called my boss and told him I wasn't going to be in early the next day. And he was like, "Really?" And I was like, "Yep, see ya." Because I was like, you know, 23, 24 years old, and that seemed like a perfectly appropriate thing to do at the time. And I got the call at halftime from this girl that I had been hanging out with a little bit. Her name is Heather. And she's like, "Hey, where are you watching the game? Do you want to meet afterwards?" And I was like, "Yeah." She's like, "Are you sure? Like, I'm going to be at Sonny McLean's. Let's meet there." I was like, "Hey, all right, I'll call you. Like, I'll call you after the game. All right. Like, you know, don't pressure me." And so the game ended, and I called her back finally. Maybe she called a couple more times. I don't know. It seemed like she was really pursuing me.
I'm sure you were like, "Yeah, don't pressure me."
It just felt like she was pursuing me a lot.
Got it.
And so I decided to meet her with some friends over at a UCLA bar called Maloney's. And we met over there, and I don't remember all of the details of the next hour or two. They're a little fuzzy, probably for her as well, but there was some public making out, and then a ride home to Mike's house with us holding hands in the back seat.
Have we heard this story before, or did you guys make out in public, like,
no, it's just that
excessively?
Right. No, you've heard the story before.
All right, just making sure this wasn't a different time.
No, this is sort of our one public makeout story. And I fell asleep at Mike's house, woke up at like 4 a.m, drove home. And I remember calling my mom to talk to her about the game and how incredible it was. She's like, "So you're happy?" I was like, "Yeah, but not about the game. I kind of hung out with this girl last night, and I think it might be awesome." And so we've been together 21 years today.
Wow.
So how about that? So shout out to Heather. 5 years later, on February 3rd, 2007, we got engaged. So, it's been... What's 21 minus 7? You have to figure out the math because I'm not doing it on the air. But that's 14 years, yeah, since we got engaged. So, happy anniversary of our engagement and meeting to Heather. People celebrate that stuff?
I was going to ask you, when do you what do you celebrate?
I think now? A lot of people stop celebrating that once they get married and they sort of think of that as their anniversary. I will be honest. I think of today as being a bigger deal than our wedding anniversary.
Huh.
Maybe other people disagree with that. I celebrate this as sort of a bigger accomplishment because, I mean, the wedding was going to happen eventually. I mean, like, we'd been together 5 years before we got engaged. Like, eventually we were going to get married. I mean, like, and nothing changed. Well, we were living together.
I've been engaged before, and I didn't get married.
Fair point. Fair enough. Yes.
So you should celebrate making it, too.
That's true. We did make the wedding without, all right, fair point. Maybe I should think of that in a little bit more reverence. But I don't know. I always think of the day we got together for the first time because we celebrated it as our anniversary for 5 or 6 years before getting. Now what? You're supposed to just abandon this poor date and now it's no longer your anniversary? That just seems sort of sad. Sad for February 3rd. So it is a good day for me and a big day in my life. I'm sorry, I got distracted. I had planned to talk about the Mariners instead of talking about me. But it dawns on me in talking about the Mariners that Jerry DePoto said something yesterday that is incredibly important. And I know not everyone is going to believe him. I know not everyone is going to hear this and say, yep, I totally agree. But when Jerry DePoto talks about what they think they've done this offseason, he might be looking at it a little differently than you are. Whereas most people understandably are saying, you were 16 games behind the Astros. What do you need to do to close that gap? Jerry doesn't see it that way.
We didn't view our offseason goal as trying to close a 16-game gap with the Astros. We don't feel like we were a true 16-game separation away from them because our team changed so much while that was all happening. So, you know, broadly, yeah, we finished behind them by that amount. You know, more acutely, what we saw after Luis joined the team, second half George Kirby was considerably different than first half George Kirby. You know, June to September, Julio was very different than April and May, Julio. And then the same for Cal Raleigh. And the same, our team evolved.
It's interesting. Jerry views it what they became rather than how they started, whereas the Astros started off as basically a finished product. All right, there might be some changes that happened over the course of the year, deadline acquisition, et cetera. But they didn't change dramatically over the course of a year the way the Mariners did with Cal Raleigh's arrival, Luis Castillo's arrival, and Julio improving and all the things he just mentioned. Those are major, major sea changes in who this Mariners team became. Now, I mean, first half also included the 14-game win streak. That's probably not going to happen again. So I'm sure there's some ways to poke holes in Jerry's argument. But he knows there's a gap between his team and the Astros. He knows that the Astros were better. They proved it over the course of a 3-game series in which they won all 3 games. Mm-hmm. But I think Jerry also knows that, hey, we need to get better, but it doesn't mean the gap is as wide as it necessarily appears. The Astros lose Justin Verlander. Yeah, they've got other players that are really good. They added Abreu, et cetera. They're not going to go away.
Sure.
But are they going to be as good without the Cy Young Award winner? Probably not.
I know. We said the same thing about Correa. Are they going to be as good without Correa?
You're right. We didn't think they would be. And it turns out that Jeremy Pena slid in and was just amazing, especially in the postseason.
Yeah.
Probably the biggest reason why the Astros beat the Mariners was that guy. He was the difference maker in that series, which is why he was the MVP. I mean, just tremendous what he did. He was better basically than anybody else on the field for the course of those 3 games.
Agreed.
But, you know, that is still a bit of a surprise and not something that I think you expect. Yeah, they've got some other good young pitchers, and maybe they'll be very good. Are they going to be better than Verlander? Seems hard to fathom. So, I like what the Mariners have done the offseason. I like how they're trying to get better. I like that they have dry powder still to continue to improve and to deal with holes if they may come up, whether it's left field or DH or whatever. They've got the resources now still, meaning assets in the minors and money, et cetera, to go out and acquire what they might need in order to shore up any holes that become obvious as they start playing. That's okay. It's okay for baseball teams to plan their season that way, even when they're in contention, which is exactly where the Mariners are right now. So it was interesting having all these conversations with Scott and Jerry and, you know, Justin Hollander and the players over the course of the last few days. Kyle pointed this out yesterday, like, all right, now let's go. What do you mean? You have to wait 2 months? I don't want to wait 2 months. I want to do it right now. Let's start the season tomorrow. We got to wait 2 weeks before we even get down to spring training. And then you got another month and a half after that before the games start. Stop dilly-dallying. Let's start playing baseball immediately because this Mariner team's good. They're fun. And I can't wait for their season to get started.
Need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Brock and Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
Well, it may be a surprise to you, to me, to, I don't know, everybody, but I really enjoyed watching some of the skills competition stuff yesterday at the Pro Bowl. I don't know. It was entertaining. It was simple. There wasn't a lot to it, but Jordan Poyer beating TJ Hawkinson in the longest drive competition was entertaining. Daron Payne and Za'Darius Smith attempting to hit golf balls, which they clearly had never done before, fairly entertaining. And some of the smack talking and laughing going back and forth. I enjoyed some of the dodgeball, though Tariq Woolen struggled badly, got knocked out pretty quickly. Gino did okay in the accuracy competition. He had 20 points, but I think that was good enough for third. Ended up actually getting beat by my guy Tyler Hundley, so I don't know what that means. And then there was some fun conversation as well, including Derek Carr being very honest.
You've thrown touchdown passes in Vegas before. You've been on fire. Have you ever been that hot in Las Vegas?
Not that hot. It's probably why I'm going somewhere else.
Nice.
See, I think he's being self-deprecating the more I listen to it. I think he's just sort of making fun of himself. But yeah, it was,
he had that ready to go.
Yeah. I don't know. I think he was making fun of himself. It's hard to say. You don't think he's got that level of...
You think he was doing that to himself when he took 2 weeks off at the end of the season?
They sent him home.
Yeah. So right. I don't think I'd be making fun of myself there.
I don't know. It's a little hard to say. Regardless, I found it entertaining. It's all going to culminate with a couple of flag football games this weekend. I don't know whether they'll be better or worse than what we used to see in the Pro Bowl. Can't be much worse. So I'm enjoying them attempting some new things. I like the guys trying to catch water balloons or trying to catch. The one that made me laugh was these offensive linemen catching footballs, like punted footballs. But they had like they had to hold as many footballs as they could while they were catching a football. I don't know, man. It was fairly entertaining. And to see how excited they would get when they would succeed, I don't know. It was worth a few minutes for me.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
All right, we're all just trying to figure out what Geno Smith is worth and what he's going to get in the open market. And it's been challenging, right? This week, ESPN listed him as the fifth best free agent and then pegged his value at some $30 million a year. Yesterday, Pro Football Focus said, not so fast, we have him as the second best free agent on the market, and so obviously they see his value as being a whole lot higher than that. Max Kellerman on yesterday with Bump and Stacy.
Pete Carroll clearly can win with Geno Smith. Now, can you win the whole thing? That remains to be seen, right? You do feel like you're not at an advantage if you're playing another team that's also good and well-coached, but they have a spectacular quarterback. But like Daniel Jones, although Geno has better receiving targets, it's one thing to say, well, he's just in a good system. But it's another thing to say, no, but he's playing it well, right? Geno Smith played well, at least what I saw. You guys are paying closer attention to Geno and the Seahawks than I am. But I thought Geno played well this year. And you can do a lot worse than Geno Smith over the next 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, the question is, if he really is the number two wide receiver quarterback on the market, number two free agent on the market, then maybe he is worth paying that much money to. Maybe you can continue to get more growth from him. But if you're going to do that, you got to figure out another way to get better. You've got to obviously make some significant cuts, replace those guys, and improve. I don't know whether you got enough cap space to get all of that done, but if you could pull it off, believe me, I'd be certainly happy to have the quarterback situation locked up with Geno for a couple more years. I just want to know that you're going to make your defensive line and your front seven a whole lot better than it's been.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Well, after listening to Mariners players, front office members, etc., the last few days, they do seem confident and not false bravado. They don't sound like they're trying to convince you of anything. They sound like they legitimately believe in themselves and their team, and maybe most importantly, the plan that they have.
With a team that is still one of the youngest, I think the youngest in our division, we are still sub-29 years old on our average age. We're coming off consecutive 91 seasons and a playoff berth a year ago. We got three first-round draft picks and multiple things to be excited about.
Jerry kind of goes on from there. I agree with him. There is a lot of reason to be hopeful and optimistic about where the Mariners are going, but, you know, also still some holes. And one of those is still potentially looking for a bat. There are some names out there. If you're looking still for a DH, I don't know whether any of these should be, you know, particularly exciting, but Gary Sanchez has had a lot of productive years as a catcher. The Yankees and Twins, he's out there and available, and he could DH and maybe be a third catcher for you. Miguel Sano is working out for teams. He would probably be a DH at this part of his career. Yuri Gurriel, Luke Voit, Mike Moustakas, so some names you might be familiar with. However, there is one other way this can work, and it requires Evan White showing up and eventually taking a job at first base that would allow Ty France to slide into the DH spot. Here's the plan with Evan White.
He'll come to spring training. You know, he needs ABs. He's missed a lot of plate appearances over the last 2 years, and you know that what that looks like. He'll compete for a spot on the roster. The likelihood is we'll want him to gather up some at bats in AAA and get back to some type of routine. But he's got the talent where you don't hold him back. There's really it's up to his health to determine the impact that he can have on our team, and we're still hopeful that that's a real thing.
Well, if he can, and that's a big if, and I don't think they're counting on it, but if he can be healthy and productive in 2023, that'll be a pretty huge, huge bonus for the Mariners into this season. There you go. That's everything you need to know. Quarter past every hour here on the new Brock and Salk Show.
You know, something I'll give the new Pro Bowl skills competition some credit for is showing freak professional athletes not good at something.
Right.
Like that.
And them finally. And them enjoying that.
True. And obviously there's going to be guys who are good at everything, but seeing somebody try to catch the ball out of the jug machine and right. just look sloppy and like it's impossible for them to do.
Yeah.
I know that's not the case. Or in golf, like when the guys are trying to hit the long drive and like I learned how to golf on YouTube this morning. That's humbling. I enjoy that part of it more than
I thought that part was great. And actually, because I watched a bunch of the Kraken doing their skills stuff a week or so ago, right, when they did it at Climate Pledge. I watched sort of the half hour, you know, Piper Shaw version that she put together afterwards. And you know, the one thing I will say about the NBA over other leagues is you just get so much more personality.
True.
Right. Did I say the NFL or did I say the NBA?
I meant the NFL.
There's a lot in the NBA as well.
Yeah.
But in this case, I was talking about the NFL.
Well, it's like the NHL players pride themselves on.
Right.
Doing interviews where they're like, they feel like they're being held hostage or it seems like they're.
Right. Yeah. And the problem is when you do that during the whole season, I get it. I understand why they do it. But now you're at a skills competition and, you know, Piper's out there working hard. All she wants them to do is sort of crack, you know, make some fun of each other. And they're just like, well, we're just going out there trying to help the team. It's like, no, you're not just going out there trying to help the team in a freaking skills competition. Try to say something entertaining. Try to show a little of your personality.
Yeah.
Baseball players struggle with it often as well. And then you see the NFL guys, and they're just like ripping on each other and having a good time. And it's super easy for them to just like turn off whatever cliche machines might be going on in their head and just enjoy being around each other and laughing about it. And they didn't mind kind of going to the desk, and Saquon was fun and funny, and I thought RG3 did a good job with it. I don't know, the whole thing was entertaining. I enjoyed it.
I think it's probably just I think they in general tend to encourage more personality, but
yeah.
It's also interesting to note that the NFL does theirs after the season and the NBA and NHL and MLB don't.
Oh, so maybe they're sort of, it's after, like they can take their mask off a little bit and be like, okay, I can let my guard down and just sort of hang out. That's a fairly good point. I hadn't thought about that. And maybe that's part of it, but I don't know. I really enjoyed it. I think anytime we actually get to see who these guys are instead of the, you know, personality that they've created to talk to the media, that's usually a pretty good thing. All right. Coming up next, Joe Fan actually created his own personality just to talk to us every Friday at 7:30. We'll see if we can find out who is the real Joe Fan. Next, Brock and Salk, CL Sports on 710.
You're listening to Brock and Salk.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle Sports Station.
I saw this report from Dove Kleiman who says, prior to his retirement, Tom Brady went over his options, including the Niners, Raiders, and Dolphins, according to Jeff Darlington. When a return to the Patriots was suggested to Brady, he quickly said, no, that ain't happening. Eventually, he retired as the GOAT at age 45. I wonder whether he would sign a one-day deal or something like that, like KJ did here with the Seahawks, to retire as a Patriot. I know Bob Kraft has said that he would like that. And, you know, I'm not going to make today about Tom Brady, and that story's not all that relevant here. But as I said about a half hour ago, it was 21 years ago today in 2002 that Brady won his first Super Bowl, launching my relationship with my wife. And so I kind of feel like I owe him one a little bit. Like if Brady doesn't come back that night, it's entirely possible Heather and I are a misconnection or whatever. So as always, a thank you to Tom Brady and every member of the 2001 one Patriots team. Thank you. I appreciate it. Thanks for enriching my life significantly, you know, allowing me to get together with my wife, allowing her to get drunk enough to be with me, allowing, you know, my kids to eventually be born and everything else. So just a quick thank you. Tip of the cap to Tom Terrific. That's why he's the GOAT. Joe Fan joins us right now. Hello, sir. How are you?
I'm good. You know what? That is exactly why he's the GOAT. Not right. for winning all the rings, but for getting you a wife, man. Yeah, he deserves a ton of credit for that.
It's entirely possible I never would have found one. I'm not all that easy to like, as plenty of people have found out while listening to this show. So thank God Brady was able to come back that night. What did you make of the Mariner week? This was sort of, you know, get to know the Mariners, get excited about spring training, et cetera. Do you find yourself, after all of this, more excited?
Yes, I guess. I think for me, like, spring training could be sort of boring, which I think is like a fun thing, you know, because that is the sign of a good team that has kind of its core set. I mean, there's really not a lot of intrigue in terms of who's going to be on the roster, where the roster spot's going to go. I mean, unless, you know, someone really comes out of nowhere, right? Unless, you know, like a Cade Marlowe or Taylor Trammell really force themselves onto the roster, you know, it's sort of, okay, who's going to be the fifth starter? What are they going to do with Flexen and Marco? You know, but I'm really intrigued for, you know, some of the names that were mentioned. Certainly Bryce Miller. Can't wait to watch him pitch. Mm-hmm. You know, after listening to Jerry gush about him, and he's been this name on the rise, and the thought of having, you know, a trio in the bullpen of, you know, Matt Brash, Andres Munoz, and Bryce Miller, you know, for a playoff stretch sounds really exciting, you know, when you have three flamethrowers in there. And then I think finally listening to Justin Hollander say that, you know, he thinks Logan Gilbert isn't the finished product yet. And that's really exciting because I think it's easy to overlook Gilbert to Luis Castillo, a full year of him, and George Kirby, a full year of him, especially after that playoff start against the Astros where he was so dominant. But to say, oh, well, Logan Gilbert still has some maturation left as well. And so what's the upside there? And he was a borderline all-star a year ago. So, yeah, certainly excited. But, you know, when you're a good team, you know, April or not April, you know, March shouldn't be the most exciting month of your season. Just like if you're a football team, August shouldn't be the most exciting month of your season. So that's kind of what I'm excited about, is that it's different this year.
Yeah, they feel like they're in a good place. And I feel like that's what I sort of got. I think it's a great point. And I also think they really believe that they're in a good place. And you hear Jerry DePoto talking about it. This cut really jumped out to me. This was Jerry yesterday with us.
We didn't view our offseason goal as trying to close a 16-game gap with the Astros. We don't feel like we were a true 16-game separation away from them because our team changed so much while that was all happening. So, you know, broadly, yeah, we finished behind them by that amount. You know, more acutely, what we saw after Luis joined the team, second half George Kirby was considerably different than first half George Kirby. You know, June to September Julio was very different than April and May Julio. And then the same for Cal Raleigh. And the same, our team evolved.
You buy that?
Yeah, I think there's something to it. And certainly they're banking on that. You know, I think so much of what the expected progression of this team is just, again, the steps, the sizable steps forward for the young core that, you know, he kind of just ran through. So I do get that. It was fun to listen to him say, you know, when Luis Castillo shows up and dominates the Yankees in his debut, there's sort of just like this whole vibe in the clubhouse of like, okay, like we could do some things. And then, you know, ultimately they make it to the playoffs and, you know, certainly the divisional round disappointing, but they went toe to toe with the Astros and certainly gave them everything they could handle for those three games. So, yes, I do understand what Jerry is saying, you know, and I think, you know, certainly it's very much a glass half full look at it, as you sort of should look at it at this time of year, you know, and you just got to get through spring healthy. I mean, that's really the storyline. You know, it's not roster battles, this and that. It's just get to opening day healthy and ready to roll.
What'd you make of the Broncos coaching search finally ending up with Sean Payton?
Yeah, I mean, sort of bizarre, you know, like Jim Harbaugh says he's staying at Michigan. They still fly out there and really pitch him hard and see if he can change his mind. Even the day of, you know, making the big trade with the Saints, they're pushing hard for D'Amico Ryan. So, like, sort of interesting, you know, like it doesn't necessarily speak volumes of like, oh, yeah, Sean Payton was the guy we couldn't live without. And then it ultimately turns into you giving away another first round pick and a second round pick and having to pay him handsomely. So a bit bizarre, and I'm fascinated to see how that relationship with Russ sort of plays out. And it's, I wrote it on Seattle Sports this week. It's sort of an interesting kind of an unusual combination of pressure in terms of trying to fix Russ, but also job security, because if things continue to go south, Russ will be the first to go.
Do you think he can fix Russ?
I don't know. I really don't. I don't even know. It was so bad in 2022 that you're just like, there's no way that's it. Like, he's just done. But I also am not positive that it will get markedly better. You know, I think baby steps. I don't think it's going to be as bad as it was this year. I mean, this year is a comprehensive train wreck in Denver, and Sean Payton should fix that. But how much? I really don't know. I don't even know how to project that.
Yeah, I kind of get where you're coming from there, and don't know exactly what sort of a system he'll use. Is he gonna, you know, is he going to build around Russ's strengths? Is he gonna try to jam Russ into the system that was effective for Drew Brees? The one thing I feel like I know about Sean Payton is that he will be the guy in charge. It's not going to be Russ anymore. There's not going to be that power vacuum because your head coach is weak. He will be the guy in charge. And right there, I think will be a pretty good start for Denver.
Yes, I agree. Certainly when you have a true CEO in the building, it changes things, as opposed to a first-year head coach trying to figure it out on the fly. He's got this quarterback who just got paid handsomely. He's also new to the organization, and there's all the wrinkles and layers to that, you know, when it comes to what was in his contract with the extra office and parking spots and this and that. And you're having to manage that relationship while just figuring out how to lead a team. And so, yeah, I do agree that should help raise the floor a decent bit.
Your buddy and mine, Brady Henderson, writing this week, he was asked to sort of put together an offer for Geno Smith if he were the Seahawks, and his offer was 3 years, $90 million, 50 guaranteed. Would you make that offer if you were the Seahawks?
It's tough. You know, I think the reason behind that offer, rather than doing the franchise tag, is you can move a bunch of that money to later years and minimize the cap hit in 2023, where, you know what, they've got a little bit over 30 million to spend. And that would, you know, if it was just a true 30 million, that would basically take up all of it. So, yes, I think that is a contract you can work around. It puts him outside the top 10 in terms of quarterback money, in terms of average annual value. I think that is more than fair for both sides. It gives Geno his payday, and the Seahawks get to ensure that they have, you know, competent quarterback play, you know, even more than that, for the next 3 years, then depending on what happens in the draft and if they get a young guy they really like, and, you know, maybe they go that direction as well. I don't think that prohibits them from taking a quarterback in the draft.
No, I don't think it does either. I wonder if it prohibits them from building what they need to elsewhere on their defense.
I mean, again, we've had this conversation. It's the issue is, yes, you want to build that Eagles Niners roster, and it's tough to do, but also your season's sunk before it begins if you don't have competent quarterback play. And how many times do we see teams go through young quarterbacks who are on rookie deals and they're just terrible, and they don't ever reach the playoffs. They don't ever figure it out. So, yeah, I mean, that is the route. If you can find a quarterback in the draft who is a stud and you're paying him on the rookie deal, you get to be the Bengals and the Eagles, where you're getting elite play for minimal money. You know, sort of like what the Seahawks had this year, you know, kind of, you know, a very lucky sort of scenario where that doesn't happen super often with veteran quarterbacks. So it's all kind of in the same bucket. But yeah, it is. It's tough because if you're going to go that route, there's a way lower floor in terms of where your season could go if you're going to go cheap and try to, you know, roll the dice with a young quarterback.
Hey, has there been any buzz in Vegas about the Pro Bowl? Has that, like, registered there at all?
Not a ton, no. I think people go to the events and they sort of enjoy it, but there's not, like, a citywide buzz. There's just so much always going on in Vegas that, you know, that doesn't really necessarily move the needle a whole lot in terms of interest across the board.
I kind of liked it. I watched some of it yesterday. I found myself enjoying it a lot more than I thought I would. Did you watch any?
I watched some, yeah, and I think it's fun. I think all the skills competition stuff has always been sort of a good time.
Yeah.
I know the practices people go to when there was a practices last year, not just the events. So I think, like, the people, like, show up for, like, the actual stuff, and they enjoy it and all that, but it's not like you're seeing billboards everywhere, like, oh, you know, Pro Bowl is coming, don't miss it, this, you know, details, such and such and such. So kind of requires you to do your own homework.
Yeah, it was kind of interesting. What I liked watching is that they seemed like they were having fun. The players seemed to be engaged and enjoying it and taking it, you know, quote unquote, seriously, right? They weren't just messing around. They were having fun, but being sort of competitive. They were legitimately trying to win dodgeball. Like, good. That's kind of what I want to see, is I want to see those guys, you know, competitive spirit kick in, but also see them laughing about it at the same time.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, and they've had dodgeball for a few years, so I think expanding on that sort of concept of you get these guys' personalities out there, helmets off, really get to showcase who they are. And then also you add some competition to it. These guys are certainly dudes that whatever they're doing, they want to win. And so, yeah, that is fun. And you don't have to worry about the back end of, like, this fake football game for four quarters that they have to pretend to care about. So I do think it's a really smart decision by the NFL.
Joseph, good stuff as always. I'll let you go. I know you've got AT&T Pro-Am to prepare for today. See if Jordan can do a little bit better on the Monterey course. So we will talk next week.
Appreciate you, Mike. Always fun.
All right, there you go. There's the great Joe Fan, who joins us every Friday at 7:30. And yeah, look, I mean, I get it. The Pro Bowl's not that cool. It never has been. I am not going to sit here and, like, crow about it, but kind of enjoyed at least what they had yesterday.
Something different. I respect that.
Yeah.
It was weird. It was kind of weird seeing Jimmy Clausen throwing passes to...
Now, that's a fair point. I was going to bring that up. I was going to make a little Jimmy Clausen joke, and then I decided not to because I didn't want to, you know...
What's your joke going to be? Is it the same as one I was going to
say? I don't know. I just... First of all... Nah, you know what? I'm not going to go there.
Well, every time I see Jimmy Clausen, I think he looks like the actor who played Cheddar Bob in 8 Mile.
Yeah.
And that's the only thing I think of.
No, he looks exactly like him, but, like, strung out.
Oh.
Like, it's a tough look for him.
Oh.
Yeah. No, I was going to make a joke somewhere along those lines.
Okay.
So I won't go there. Instead, we'll do a little Blue 88.
This is Brock and Salk's Blue 88.
Blue 88!
We take you to the field as Brock Huard breaks down three football questions as only he can.
Now here's your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Song.
No, and we have one Brock Huard available for us today, little Blue 88. Hello, sir.
Good morning, Michael. How are you?
Fantastic. Let me ask you three questions, and then I'll bug you about some other stuff. We'll start here. I was looking through that Pro Football Focus free agency article that came out yesterday, and one name kind of jumped out to me. I'm curious if you think he would be a fit here in Seattle, and that's Saints defensive end Marcus Davenport.
Ooh, I remember that guy. I think we talked a lot about him like 4 years ago, didn't we?
Yeah.
As far as a pass rusher and... Yeah, I mean, he is long. He's athletic. I think he's fought through, you know, some ups and downs in his career. It's not been a real consistent upward linear path.
Injuries, yeah.
But along those lines, I'll tell you what I did, Salky, is I went back and I looked at the 2013 NFL draft. Do you know why I went back and looked at the 2013 NFL draft when it comes to, Davenport in particular?
Why?
Because in 2013, the number one position drafted overall were defensive ends. 30 defensive ends were taken in that draft. Three of the first six picks in the 2013 draft were defensive ends. How is that relevant to Davenport or this conversation? Remember what happened in 2013 to the free agency market for pass rushers.
Mm-hmm.
Remember what happened to Michael Bennett and to Cliff Averill. Is unfortunately for those guys, there was a draft class saturated with defensive ends, and in particular at the top of the draft. So I think for a Davenport, unlike Geno Smith or what have you, I think for these pass rushing free agents, they're pretty bummed that Daniel Jeremiah has 11 of the top 50 players in this draft as pass rushers.
Mm.
And so not a great time to be a free agent pass rusher. A great time if you're John Schneider to say, ooh, we may harken back to 2013 and we may have an opportunity to get a valuable guy, a pro,
or two.
A very good player that's going to be available there in the second wave of free agency, third wave of free agency, a little bit like Michael and Cliff were, may have to bet on themselves for 1 year because this draft class, the defensive end, is ripe and rich and deep.
Very cool. All right, question number two. So I was saying I watched some of the dodgeball and other skills competitions yesterday. Who would be the best teammate of all the teammates you've had over the years? Who would be the best at dodgeball or flag football?
Marvin Harrison, not close. He's number one, he's Gumby. His body control, he was basically like the Matrix. So the ball wouldn't hit him. Like he would be able to maneuver his 175-pound frame in and around everything. Then his catch radius on top of it was ludicrous. And then he was super sticky and quick. So I think Marvin Harrison, and I don't know if they asked Peyton that yesterday or not. Peyton seemed to be kind of pretty into those competitions. But I think Peyton would probably have a similar answer to me, that as far as just kind of the spidey sense and the unbelievable body control and athleticism, and oh, by the way, hands to catch anything, I think Marvin Harrison would have been a pretty filthy dodgeball
not
player.
Not the answer I thought you were going to give.
Where were you going?
Dane Looker.
I mean, yeah. I mean, Dane's pretty special, too, now.
I mean, just Dane's ability to do everything, right? Hit a golf ball. Everything. Like, I mean, skills competition guy, don't you think he'd have been pretty valuable to have?
No question. Hit a golf ball, play pickleball. He could throw as well. So, maybe that's where he gets a little leg up on Marvin. Is I don't think Marvin was really a thrower. He was always the catcher and the receiver.
If Dane doesn't go to high school with you, does he become a quarterback?
Yes. Yeah.
So you kind of screwed up his life.
I pretty much did. Like, okay, he basically told me that. Like, if it weren't for you, I'd probably... You know, been competing with Tom Brady to age 45 in NFL QB. So I pretty much agree.
All right, question number three. Hey, we were looking at a mock draft. I think it was Danny Kelly's mock draft at The Ringer. And his mock has three quarterbacks going in the top four, including Carolina trading up to get Will Levis. They traded up for the number one pick, right? And then the Colts took Will Levis at number
taking,
four.
Bryce Young, yeah.
Do you... Do you think that's possible?
Yeah. I think in this day and age where, once again, we kind of just look at trend lines and what's going on around the league, people see around. And it's with Levis and Richardson in particular, and I think why those guys will elevate is just their God-given skill set. They're just physical tools are pretty unique. Unlike, you know, some of these drafts, Malik Willis, you know, Matt Corral last year, that just didn't have the size and the strength that Richardson and Levis have. So, yeah, and those teams are needy, and they know, and it's why these teams over the years have always been willing to take the risk, even when the numbers tell you it is a total crapshoot, and B, about 1 in 3 that you're actually going to be right on a top 10 pick, but they're willing to do it because if you are right, the value that you get is off the charts economically. So, yeah, I think that's possible. Is it probable? We'll see. You know, I know when we looked at Mel Kiper's mock draft when it came out last week, and we looked at Mel Kiper's version 1.0 versus Mel Kiper's version 4.0 the couple days before the draft, it changed dramatically. Mm-hmm. I mean, he pretty much had it nailed the night before because he's got pretty good intel. But yeah, it changed, I think, 3 of the 5 picks. It changed and turned over in that time. So these mocks are going to move up and down. The Senior Bowl, you already kind of feel some of the buzz. Did you see Daniel Jeremiah's biggest riser, by the way, in Mobile, Alabama?
Was it your guy?
Julius Brents did as much as anybody there to really help his draft stock. He's being the long corner out of Kansas State. So, yeah, we're just kind of very, very start of this journey of stock up and down. And we do know, based on history, we do know in a league that, you know, watch teams really benefit from quarterbacks on a little bit more of the cheaper end of the scale, that position will likely be overdrafted.
That is today's Blue 88 with the great Brock Huer. Did you see that Cal Raleigh was left off the top 10 list of catchers?
And they really had two catchers from Toronto?
Right. Well, they do play in the AL East. I mean, let's be clear.
Oh, my gosh. The guy that led the position in home runs, the guy that was a Gold Glove finalist, the guy that has been, you know, by all the next level stats, heralded for his framing and everything he does. Yeah, that's pretty ludicrous.
It just doesn't feel
right.
What
did his bro think about that? Was Justin all right? Did they kind of bro talk about
that? Yeah, I put a call in already, Brock, just so you know. I'm sticking up for my guy behind the scenes. I don't need to go out and get messy for my guy publicly because I know he likes to be quiet.
I'm surprised you had to put in the call. I would have thought he called you for support. I mean, like, don't you really lean on your friends in those moments and reach out to them?
I mean, that's a privileged conversation that I don't know if I can share. I don't want to. Cal would probably wouldn't like it if I shared that part.
What is the deal with producers of this show and Mariners catchers?
Yeah, kind of a thing. I would think that maybe the nickname would be beneficial, but in this case, you know, the Big Dumper, is there something controversial about that?
Maybe.
You know, like, I think it's a good thing when you're branded and you got a nickname like that and it's everyone gravitates and likes it. But maybe on a national level, the Big Dumper isn't thought of too highly.
I hadn't considered the nickname being the thing that took him out of contention. Yeah. But I guess that's obviously a possibility that we really should have addressed. So,
yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, good stuff, buddy. Thank you for spending a few minutes with us today. Enjoy your Friday and we'll talk to you on Monday.
Look forward to it, Salky. Thank you, buddy.
Yeah, there you go. The great Brock Heward, co-host of the show. You may not know. Most days it's Brock and Salk, but today we rock out with our Brock out as he is just in for Blue 88. All right. Coming up, I've been thinking a lot about the most underrated, slowest moving sports story right now and what it could mean for the future of the NFL. That's next. Brock and Salk, Seattle Sports on 710, seattlesports.com.